This is Heather Reid from Canberra, Australia, and you're listening to Cut to the Chase.
Heather Reid is in her 10th year as CEO of a federation in Australia known simply as Canberra Football. She's also the CEO of Westfield W League champions Canberra United. She's a weekly fixture on Aussie radio, and many would say she's been instrumental in the founding and development of football in Australia. This is the first in a series of Cut to the Chase episodes featuring Heather Reid, and today's focus is on leadership issues in women's football. This series is made possible by the generous donation of T. Donkersgood of Vancouver, Canada. The question that we've sort of bandied about on Twitter already, and I've got to say, I love Twitter. I mean, I don't know how else I would have met you if it hadn't been for Twitter, but the question we've bandied about already that I really want to attack today and sort of sink our teeth into is, does women's football need more competent leadership or more female leadership? What do you think about that?
I think we need both, and I think there are a lot of competent women who can lead. It's it's a bit difficult for me being the only female leader in women's football, well, in football generally in Australia, but previously my role was in women's football. And I know there are a lot of women who are competent and ready to go into leadership positions, but it's a matter of getting a foot in the door, being given the chance, and then hopefully being, afforded the opportunity to do what they need to do. And, I mean, you can look at people like Moya Dodd, who rose through the ranks of being a player. She's a qualified lawyer. She's worked in the legal area of broadcasting. She was appointed to the board of Football Federation Australia. From there, she went on to the Asian Football Confederation, and now she is the most powerful woman in Australian football because she's on the FIFA Executive Committee. There is a role model that, you know, we should all aspire to, and I think that's part of the whole process as well, that we need more women in these positions to demonstrate to younger women coming through that there is a space for you within the realm of leadership in football.
All right. Now, this is an interesting point that you've made. And there's the role model issue, and then there's the foot in the door issue, and then there's the existing leadership issue. Let's talk about the existing leadership. There are two problems occurring currently. A lot of the female leadership in football is either protecting their perch or they are busy tiptoeing through the tulips.
Mm-hmm.
Either way, it feels like many of these women in leadership manage to squander more time. And let's mm-hmm. face it, with the FIFA in particular, it's been 100 years without any women in leadership as a part of either the executive committee or, I mean, if you look at any of the federations, there are very few women there that are leading. And I'm not going to get into those positions and be able to walk through the doors because I would rather bash my head into the wall and say, look, yeah. Fellas, let's come on, man. It's been 100 years. Let's just friggin' go already because there's so much to be done. And, you know, I want to do it. Let me do it. And it's a completely different approach. I understand that. And to me, it takes all kinds in this world. And so if it takes a whole bunch of people like me to run at the wall until we finally break through like the Berlin Wall, then, yeah. Hey, I think people like me understand that we are expendable in that way. I don't believe there's only one way for women to lead. And yet I've only seen one way, which is the tiptoeing through the tulips and the perch protection program.
protect your perch. Look, I don't think that they are specific issues to women. I think you would find men in leadership positions as well protecting their perch. And that's why we've got, you know, so many people within national and international federations like FIFA that have been there for a very long time. And they protect their perch through a whole range of mechanisms, whether that's money in the brown paper bag, paying for education of kids at universities, buying players' houses, all of those sorts of things that we hear about where there is corruption, nepotism, cronyism, etc. And then the same thing about, tiptoeing through the tulips. It's better to stay safe and keep that position than it is to rock the boat. And you're probably aware of that, expression of the hand that rocks the cradle can rock the boat. And I often talk about daring to be courageous. Be courageous and stand up for what you believe in. And that takes a lot of energy. It also means that you have to be strategic. You have to carefully lobby and make sure you've got supporters coming with you so you're not the lone voice fighting for change. Because essentially what we're doing in this male entrenched dominated world of football still is fighting for change. We're dealing with gender politics at their absolute maximum. And the worst thing to happen is to become ostracized and labeled and discredited so people stop paying attention to you. So it's really important that those few of us who are in these leadership positions of influence can manage our way around and through the tulips without damaging the flowers, so to speak, And unfortunately, some of these things do take time. There are what we regard as systemic barriers. They may be, wrapped up in constitutional governance policies where, a certain number of people have to represent certain interests. Or if you move away from interest representation, so you no longer have somebody looking after the women's football or futsal or juniors or something, then you need to make sure that the constitution or your framework of governance is open enough that enables a wide range, diverse range, inclusive range of people on those committees and on boards of decision making. I mean, we still have in Australia, I think, a sports system of governance where it's very white, middle class, Anglo-Saxon male, or white, male and stale is often the expression that's used. we don't see people of colour. We don't see people of Asian background, and yet a large part of our population is, and we are part of Asia, a large part of our population is Asian. And Moya Dodd, for example, is part Chinese, and I think that affords her a really important avenue to understanding and dealing with the culture of football within Asia, apart from anything else. So it's a whole range of those things. And I think, those few of us who are women in leadership position, and I'm really only talking about management and governance. I'm not talking about leaders as coaches or leaders as referees. And that's another issue. And I think, women are making great inroads in the refereeing area because FIFA has deliberately said, we will appoint women to women's fixtures wherever possible, going right back to the first World Cup. So it was almost like a special measure that they put in place to make sure that women are trained and accredited and capable of refereeing at the highest level, World Cup level. And that's what we've got. Every single World Cup game now is covered by four female officials. Nearly all of the officials at the World Cups are women. Probably still got men as their instructors, although wonderful work that, people like Sylvia Bellevue, Sonia Denencourt is doing. And I remember seeing Sonia at a World University Games in Hamilton, Canada, way back in the 1990s when she was a young up-and-coming referee who was being fast-tracked by the Canadian Association. And now she's in charge of women's refereeing in FIFA. We could see the same kind of model in place for women in coaching and women in leadership if FIFA was really committed to the change. And I question whether or not they are. And that's where the problem lies. It's with the parent association to put in place mechanisms that allow all of the children to be part of the true decision-making family. How do you like that?
I love it. And I agree with what you're saying to a large extent. And I think part of my struggle, part of my frustration is figuring out how I can help, because I recognize that it takes a certain brand to have the patience and the strategy and the vision to be able to make the kind of inroads where others can come behind and roll up the sleeves and get some stuff done once the door is open. So I do see what you're saying.
Sometimes the leaders are those that have got the money, and you don't have to look much further than, the Asian Confederation in the very, very early years of the Asian Ladies Football Federation and the Singapore Ladies and the Malaysian Ladies and the Hong Kong Ladies. Those federations were run by very rich and powerful women. It was like a toy, but it was also a way for them to have a hobby and for them to have some influence over the health and well-being of girls. They pretty much own these teams. And there's one woman who's
still... Why doesn't that happen anymore? Why don't we have the Shakira ladies and the Jolie Pitt ladies and the Lopez ladies and the...
Madonnas. We could have the Madonnas and you name it. Yeah, I know. Because FIFA shut the
door. I mean, is anybody using their influence to have conversations with these women? I mean, we're talking about tiptoeing through the tulips and whatnot else, but is anybody using that model from history to talk to some of these very influential and very powerful women from Brazil to India? I mean, isn't there a female CEO of PepsiCo right now? I mean, it just goes on and on and on. Why are we not inviting these women to come to these games, to come to these events, to meet these players, to hear their stories, to give advice in terms of business and how you go forward?
Great opportunity at the Men's World Cup. The most powerful people from those countries, Argentina, female president or prime minister, Germany, Angela Merkel, and Brazil. So the Germany-Brazil game.
Yeah, but I don't mean the politicians. The politicians, they're pawns and figureheads at best, in some sense of the word.
They have the capacity to ask questions and probe and also influence policy about certainly in our country, about how much money each sport gets from the government. You don't have this similar system where your government doesn't necessarily support your national organizations. They have Olympic.
Well, governments give money to federations, and then federations spend it however they want. So they can spend $360,000 US on the men's team and $40,000 US on the women's team.
But there is a framework that they have to spend the money on, but it's a very complex framework that also is based on performance in world competition. And they don't necessarily take into account that in a sport like football, you've got to get through this level of qualification to get to the next level of qualification to get to, the World Cup in the end.
Oh, they take it into account. They just feel that it's not justified to spend the money on the women's side. They know what it takes because they do it with the men's teams. They do it with the boys. They know what it takes. They know how to do numbers. They know how to do math well enough to get the men.
They just don't
it's not justified for their culture, for their personal whatever. It just blah.
Yeah. They don't see it as commercially. It's not commercially or politically as valuable.
I don't know about the second one, but the first one, yes.
On that note.
Oh, but before we go, I just want to say thank you so much for spending some time with Cut to the Chase. Maybe we can do this again sometime.
We will. We will indeed. Thank you very much. And we say g'day and we say see you later.